Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:50 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 17th, and I thought that I would kick off and look at China today. It was up in a reasonably dynamic manner. So, hovering here above the 200-day moving average, there's been a succession of higher reaction lows since the bounce from the 3,500 level at the end of last year. It hasn't quite yet broken the downtrend. And if it can break that sequence of lower major rally highs, then that would certainly be much more encouraging. I think that this more positive action generally is following some statements by central government officials over the weekend that the renminbi is now a free floating currency. So the renminbi was a little bit weaker in here today, but not really in a dynamic manner. And it has been quite steady here between about 680 and 7 renminbi versus the dollar for the last 2 or 3 months. I would really hesitate to take as read that that is in fact the case, that it is a free floating currency right now. But they're certainly very intent upon finding more people to accept the renminbi. And I also saw news today. There's a lot of news on the nuclear front. The one item was that Bangladesh will repay a loan to Russia for building a nuclear reactor, and that it will be paid back in renminbi. So I thought that was a rather interesting development, because that's not simply a bipartisan agreement, but rather it's a tripartite way of using the currencies, using it as an international medium of exchange. And we haven't seen many examples of that, so I think that's rather interesting. Now, of course, China is an energy importer, so they have a very clear incentive to try and import less. And one of the ways of doing that is to pioneer renewable energy, or to pioneer efficiency gains, or to basically then also pioneer nuclear. So I think they're trying to do all three. So I think that there is a strong likelihood that China will be increasing the quantity of nuclear reactors. Now, what I thought was interesting today is Germany has in fact closed down its last three nuclear reactors. So I thought that's an interesting development, because there are two potential outcomes. Well, the first, of course, is that they're not going to be as energy secure. And that's obviously a decision that's been made, which is probably more political than anything else. But then what it also means is that now Germany is pretty free to impose sanctions on Russia about exports of its own nuclear fuel. Now, obviously, France imports a lot of Russian nuclear fuel. But a number of the European countries have been agitating for that, in Eastern Europe at least. And Centrus Energy is a non-Russian uranium fuel producer, and it's right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So the next point is, are we going to see support starting to come in here? We've seen quite a bit of strength in the energy sector of late. So oil prices were a bit steadier over the last few days, but then weaker today. So not quite yet popping straight up. And but still within this range that's been forming for just about all of this month. Now, natural gas prices have put 2 days together on the upside, and firming here from the $2 area and up 16 cents today. So I think this is suggesting that bottoming is underway, and there is the potential here we're going to see some additional upside. So I initiated another long position. And European countries are well on the way to rebuilding their supplies heading into the winter of 23-24. So they're way ahead of schedule. And the natural gas price in Europe was a bit softer in here today, but LNG exports from the USA are picking up. And I think these are interesting developments. We have uranium, where there's a clear argument that it should be one of the preferred fuels if the world were really serious about carbon mitigation. But it's just politically untenable. Then the carbon emissions were a little bit steadier, at least in late trading today, but had gapped lower in early trading. So still hovering here below the 100 euro level. And this just looks like a long consolidation. It would be very tempting to think that this is a big top formation, except for the fact that it's a politically motivated price series, and politicians aren't really keen to allow the emissions price to fall. There's a lot of questions about the long-term future of the airline industry against a background where the emissions are going to be an increasingly cost prohibitive portion of the price of a ticket. And that means that people will be disincentivized to take more than one or two flights a year, or that prices aren't going to go back down to the rock bottom levels in Europe that they were before the pandemic. And of course, that is assuming that there isn't some new breakthrough in terms of long haul, or I guess medium haul sized flights. And that would mean either new planes, new engines, or new battery technology, or then the potential that the primary use for hydrogen cycle fuel cycle would be in the long haul sector. The great benefit of using hydrogen rather than batteries in long haul flights is that hydrogen's a fuel, so the plane gets lighter the further you fly it, and the same thing with a jet fuel fueled plane. Whereas if it was just simply a battery fueled plane, well, you've got to charge the battery, but the battery you have to carry for the entire duration of the flight, and then you have to recharge it when you land. So I think for long haul flights, hydrogen probably is the more attractive one of those potential outcomes. Now let's go back into the commodity sector, and the Australian market continues to rebound here. It's been ranging for nearly 2 years. It's clearly rebounding from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and if it can sustain a move up through 7,500, well, then I think it would be reasonable to conclude that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment, and this looks like a big first step above the base. So, I thought, really rather interesting that we have that type of pattern in the Australian market, and a very similar, albeit much lengthier, type of pattern for the FTSE 100. And that has also bounced from the 1,000-day moving average, and it's approaching its peak around the 8,000 level. And let's then also look at the Euro Stoxx index, which has also had a really impressive rebound over the last few weeks. But it's, I think, also particularly relevant to highlight that these markets are they're rallying from somewhat higher levels. They've recouped more of their 2022 declines, and they're a lot closer to their all-time peaks. Now, I think it's rather interesting to look at the performance of the EFA index relative to the MSCI World. And I created this chart earlier on today. Now, what I think is especially interesting is the long-term outperformance of MSCI World relative to the EFA index. So that's Europe, Africa, and the Far East. And there have been occasions when that Europe, Africa, Far East designation really did outperform. So between about 2003 and about 2007, Well, this ratio went from 4.8 to about 5.75. So there was a good long period of about 5 years when those markets really outperformed the world. And of course, the world includes the USA. So I think that's rather important that if one were simply to eschew owning the US market for those 5 years when the dollar was really trending downwards and when growth in the global economy took off, then that was a very clear period where those markets really outperformed. But I think it's even more important to highlight if one looks at the long-term history, that there are plenty of times when we get a couple of years on the upside, but they don't tend to last. So there's a clear potential that it is the long-term outperformance and earning potential of technological innovation helps to inflate the performance of the global markets. But there will be periods of time when the US will clearly underperform. And well, it does look like one of those periods began at the end of last year. And of course, it is inevitably tied both to higher valuations on the US market as well as the strength of the dollar rolling over. Now, if the dollar is, in fact, not just weaker, but rolling over into a medium-term corrective phase, which I believe is likely, well, then that would suggest that we could be in for a really rather significant correction of US assets relative to really the rest of the world. And that's basically what this ratio is pointing out. So then let's just think about, well, what would be the markets that could do well? Well, China's steadying up, and we have clear outperformance by Europe and the UK and Australia, and those are the more developed markets. Then we've had a very clear breakout by the Mexican ETF, and it is now right back in the region of its peak and completing this very lengthy base formation. And again, I think it's very important to just give some due consideration to the fact that some of these markets really went down a lot and for a persistent time between 2013 and 2020 and have since rebounded in very emphatic fashion. And the Brazilian market is also steadying from the lower side of its range. And I think it's particularly important here that despite the fact that we've had quite a bit of volatility on the energy markets, the CRB index has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So it is now back above the 200-day moving average. Now, when we then just narrow that down and look at the metals index, that's the LME index, it hasn't quite yet broken back above the 200-day moving average, but we do have a succession of higher reaction lows, and it is steadying in here. And of course, a lot of the question will be about what happens with copper. If we are going to have a new commodity-led bull market, well, then there's going to have to be a big demand growth cycle. And most particularly, that demand growth cycle for commodities would have to be deployed into productive assets. And one of the biggest problems with thinking about that is that there could be the potential that a lot of the money getting spent gets put into unproductive assets or in less efficient assets. So the return on capital invested will be less. And that sets up a problem for the future. But as long as the money is being spent, then you can have a bull market in between. So that's pretty much the bet with the copper price continuing to hold in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, of course, if we are going to have a US recession, which it really does look exceptionally likely, well, then we can expect volatility in commodity prices and that there will be very attractive buying opportunities. And we've had quite a bit of an uptick in M&A activity within the commodities sector. That hasn't really had much of an effect on the copper miners, but they are steadier. Now, of course, Glencore buying Teck Resources has been one of the factors that has really contributed to more interest. And Glencore now is right in the region of the 200-day moving average and the psychological 500p level. So, having rebounded really quite impressively, this is the first area of potential resistance. I think that what they're doing in attempting to buy Teck and taking out a position in coal is probably a smart thing to do if they can sidestep and, perhaps more accurately, continue to successfully sidestep the green lobby and the protests against any use of coal at all. But the reality is that when you look around the world, use of coal is going up, not down, and that it is really just coal in the developed markets where energy intensity is actually falling, where coal is no longer being used as much. Now, if we continue to think about some of these other international markets that will do well in an environment where we have greater global growth, well, Indonesia, with a large young population and as a commodity exporter, and a place where we could ha we've had improving standards of governance and the potential that there will be an accommodative transfer of power, that really should be beneficial for the domestic market, but it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs yet. And then the Nifty index, having rebounded really impressively last week, was a little bit softer in here today, but it is still above the 200-day moving average. The market has been going sideways for 18 months, but India now has the largest population in the world. A huge percentage of people are younger than the age of 25, and that is going to represent successive waves of millions of new workers entering the workforce every year for at least the next decade, perhaps even two. And that is going to put great pressure on the administration to find jobs and a route to a better standard of living for a large number of those people. There's a lot of questioning about how Mumbai is going to be revitalized and how the slums are going to be torn down and rebuilt, and who's going to be the primary beneficiary of that. I think the bigger question really is if they can revitalize one city, will they be able to do it with more? And the fact that there haven't been plans that have been published, well, from a governance perspective, that obviously doesn't sound very good. But if one wants to push through a set of plans in an environment where bureaucracy is sclerotic, then doing things without engaging with too many bureaucrats might actually be a faster way of getting things done. Does that mean that the rights of some people will be trampled? I think that's probably likely. And will that sacrifice then benefit the wider economy? Well, I think it is interesting that every country has to grapple with these questions. And developed countries have the luxury of thinking about these from the rights of the individual. And at the other extreme, you have China, which tramples on the rights of the individual but successfully builds massive infrastructure projects. And I think perhaps we'll see some sort of medium road taken in India, and that there will have to be there will have to be a greater hand taken in just plowing over or building over farmland and compensating farmers. But the Nifty index, at least, is best bought following reactions. Now, I really do feel sometimes like it's like waiting for Godot, and that we can talk indefinitely about tightening credit conditions, rising interest rates, and lower money supply growth. But the rest of the world appears to be getting on with it. and that the most acute risk of a recession is in the USA. Now, that doesn't mean that the rest of the world won't feel some pain in the event that there is a US recession, because the US leash effect is going to be important. But I do think that if we are looking at the dollar rolling over, then there is the potential that the global markets will do substantially better. Now, Bitcoin prices were in negative territory today and back below the 30,000 level. It has not yet broken down through the underlying trading range, so it could yet rebound from these levels. And gold prices were also a little bit weaker today, but were off the lows. Now, you had Christine Lagarde talking today about her interest in central bank digital currencies and saying that countries around the world are more interested in trading with China, engaging with China's digital currency, or accumulating gold. So I think that's one of the reasons why gold was off its lows in here today. I think there are two primary reasons why the Federal Reserve has been so aggressive in raising interest rates. I think it's very clear that the first one was to try and get inflation under control, because one of their mandates is price stability. But then the other one is about creating a ready market for treasury bonds. And the 10-year yield has bounced again from the region of the 200-day moving average and the 3.5% level. So it's pushing back up again. That's obviously representative of fear that there were a little bit further away from the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle than we were just a few weeks ago, and that instead of one more hike, there might be a couple of more hikes. Well, kind of think that perhaps we should be prepared for surprises on the upside in terms of yields until we see clear deflationary evidence, and most particularly an uptick in unemployment. And the trend of joblessness is rising, it's just not accelerating higher. And eventually, the Federal Reserve will tighten too much. They'll over-tighten, there'll be a problem will evolve, they'll have to cut rates. Then the dollar will come under significant pressure following an initial rally as we get a flight to quality. Then gold would take off, emerging markets would take off. And I think that's almost like the sequence of operations that we should expect. It's just not all going to happen at the timing that we might like. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.